Polarization just keeps getting worse in Washington. It's as bad as they've ever seen it, and it seems to be making Americans very upset.
Impeach 45!
This is politics.
Impeach 45!
Is this where we want to set the bar for future presidents?
Clinton was the worst in history.
It was a vote along party lines that made President Clinton only the...
I'm not for gay marriage.
I believe marriage is between a man and a woman. And so does
Barack
John.
Obama nor
but a number of incidents turned violent last afternoon. A limousine was set on fire downtown.
It's my
smoke
decision.
Could be seen
it's
for blocks
not
away.
Baby.
And protesters hurled trash cans and
flash
bombs.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Bob and Weave. We've been trying to start a podcast here for the last hour, and I cannot get my corona-free co-host in the mood to do anything.
I don't know why you're blaming me.
We just are not going anywhere.
I gotta be honest with you. I'm sick and fucking tired of you.
I know.
I don't want to be around you anymore.
And look, we started off with such a good day and a serious topic we were going to talk about, mm-hmm. and it is... just gone downhill drastically.
It has. Well, so what's happening is, I think I figured out, because I really am sick of you.
So that voice you hear is the Bob, and I'm the Weave.
Hey, guys.
And if you can't tell, he's really sick of me already.
Yeah, and it's not your fault. I realize that I'm around you this week the same amount of time I'm always around you and Mike, but the difference is, usually, I have lots of other interactions with lots of other people, many of whom I like slightly less than you. So when I'm around you, it's kind of refreshing to be around someone that I don't dislike.
That was like a, almost like a backhanded compliment.
Sort of, yeah. But I haven't been around anyone. So we live out in the country out here. I mean, I live on, we call it the compound. I'm isolated from everyone. All the kids are home. And my littlest one just had his tonsils out. And so I'm not sleeping good because he's waking up all night with that. And we're not getting out. And we're all doing our part. And don't have a problem with it. I think it's the best move. But sick of Zach. Don't want to be around Zach anymore.
We're tired of looking at each other.
Yeah. But we do have a serious topic to talk about today. And we'll try to stay on track. I'll let you explain what we're talking about. This is part one of our new series.
Yeah. So now that the political stuff is kind of winding down, we're going to edge away from that, because we all know how much I don't like politics.
Yeah, and people really didn't like my take on politics.
Yeah, apparently not.
I mean, some people did, but a lot of people didn't. But we had some really cool discussions on the
fan
page.
There was good. There was good.
Some really good discussion. Nobody really got nasty with each other.
No, everybody's been really civil, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So our new series is about criminal justice reform.
Yes, sir.
And today we're looking at juvenile sentencing and the, I don't know what you want to call it.
Well, it's based on the 2012 Supreme Court ruling that said that that juveniles, anyone that's convicted of a crime under the age of 18, cannot be given an automatic life without parole sentence. And then, so it's juvenile sentencing, but it's the limiting of life sentences for juvenile offenders.
See how much better that sounded when you said it?
Right. You said you wanted to bring us in. I was loaded.
I'm the comic relief.
Right. I hope not, because I didn't do a heck of a lot of research into this.
Oh, we're good.
I've looked at it in the past, and as I said, the bill was Miller versus
Alabama in 2012.
Can you talk a little bit about that, where this came to be?
So I guess I should have looked up this more. But the case was about two 14-year-olds, actually. There was another boy involved, but it really stemmed off the Miller. And it was a murder case. And basically, they said that it was unconstitutional based on the Eighth Amendment, which is cruel and unusual punishment,
mm-hmm.
saying that these boys didn't have the maturity, didn't have the knowledge of what they were doing, and therefore shouldn't be punished the way they're being punished.
And I think a lot of it had to do with, I don't know a whole lot about that particular case. I know quite a bit about the ruling in general. And I don't know if this came up with them later on or if that was like during their sentencing. But it has to do with a lot of actual scientific data that has to do with the development of a juvenile's brain.
Well, yeah, that's part of it. They look at family history.
Mm-hmm.
They look at any criminal involvement at that time, mental health, their school history, just their general maturity.
Mm-hmm.
And in this particular case, the Miller, I know that that he was in and out of foster homes. The mother gave up really early. When he was in a foster home, he was abused. You know, they look at a lot of these things.
Well, I think that's what they look like in the hearings for resentencing, right? To see if they qualify. But what I'm talking about is the basis for the standard, the ruling to begin with comes from the scientific, it's not even a theory. I mean, it's fact that the especially the frontal cortex and some of the decision making parts of your brain don't really fully develop until you're 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when they said, you know, it could be cruel and unusual punishment for someone who was, say, 14 years old when they committed a crime to be punished for the rest of their life. Because, you know, the idea is at some point they should mature and be more easily able to be rehabilitated than an adult, because they're actually, their brain's growing during that time.
So this was actually a close decision. I didn't realize it was as close as it was. It was 5-4 in Supreme Court.
Okay.
Saying that it was unconstitutional.
Right.
So that was a lot closer. I would have suspected that it would have been a bigger margin than that. But
yeah. And I was always confused by this, because this came up with the Truth and Justice Season 1 case and the same case that was covered in the podcast, Serial and Undisclosed. Anand Syed, who was 17 years old when he was arrested, and he was convicted and sentenced to life in prison. And it came up that, you know, it could be possible that his conviction or his sentence could be lowered because he falls into this category.
Okay.
But I thought it was just that you couldn't give him a life sentence. But in fact, it says it can't be an automatic life sentence.
So they still can.
Right.
Yeah. So in 2016, there was another ruling, which is Montgomery versus Louisiana, which allowed them to retroactively align this with different sentences.
Right. So you could take someone, instead of having that be the standard for cases going forward, that they didn't get this automatic life sentence, they could actually take kids that were all, and that actually was the part that brought Anand into this. They went retroactively saying that anyone who was convicted as a juvenile and is currently serving a life sentence can have their case reevaluated, their sentence reevaluated.
And there's about 2,000, a little over 2,000 cases right now that are eligible for resentencing in the United States.
Right. And the I wanted to bring up, so the reason, because I know people are going to ask about Adnan, and I think I pulled this up here, but the reason he won't really be brought, this won't really affect him, is because, as Zach started to say earlier, there are certain criteria that you have to meet in order to get the get your sentence overruled and changed to a lighter sentence. One of the big ones being that you have to admit to your crime and take responsibility for it and show remorse for it. And in Anand's case, and that's where this doesn't affect a lot of people who, you know, still profess they're fighting for their innocence, you know, they won't be able to fall under this ruling because they're not willing to say, I have remorse for what I did, because they're claiming that they didn't do it.
Yeah. And what a lot of this shows too is it's not necessarily that they're going to be resentenced. A lot of these cases that are going to come forward from this are actually the judges hearing whether they should be resentenced, and the judge doesn't have to resentence them.
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah. And we have here locally several cases that are in the news right now.
Yeah, as of this week, I mean, there's cases in the news, and there's actually about 14 local cases for us. I know that's not national, but just in our small neck of the woods, there's 14 cases
just in our county.
Yeah,
that people that are being having, and some of them have already had their sentences lowered.
Yes,
from the life sentence. So I don't know how you want to walk through this, because I kind of wanted to go through. I think a good way to talk about this is to go through some of these specific circumstances and then maybe talk about what our opinions on the ruling is.
Okay.
Or how do you want to do it?
Yeah, we can do that. So really, this was brought forth to us, you know, first and foremost, because there is a case going through that is actually from my hometown, the town that you used to live in, that I live in now.
Right.
From when I remember the case happening.
Mm-hmm.
It was two gentlemen, Mark Abatoy and Anthony DePalma. They were going to steal the car, run away to California. It was a very heinous crime. They were both 17 at the time. It was a very, very heinous crime. And both these boys were convicted and automatically sentenced to life without parole.
Right. And interesting twist on this case, those two guys If you look up any of the case documents on them or what, because you can find just by a quick Google search of their names, you can find a little bit about their cases. But they all say that they had a previous record of stealing cars.
Mm-hmm.
One of those cars, I don't know if it was cars. As far as I know, it was one car. It was a black Buick Regal that they stole out of my mother-in-law's driveway because it was my wife's car.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, so they had my wife's car that she referred to as Black Beauty.
Yeah.
Because she actually cried the day she got... She was 16, and she came home, and she was so excited because she was hoping she was going to get a car. And there was this big old four-door sedan in the driveway, and she's like, whose car is that? And they said, that's yours. Yay! Gave her the keys, and she cried and went into her room. But they love to use it to TP people because, as she said, she was black, so you couldn't see her moving in the night.
Okay.
So she grew to love the car, and then one day went up to go to school in the morning, and the car was gone. And they didn't. But it was literally the first car theft that the police chief at the time had ever handled in the city of Bridgman, to give you an idea of the crime rate in Bridgman.
Oh, I mean, that's how it was when this murder happened.
Right.
When this murder happened, I mean, it was...
This was months before.
It was huge for us. I mean, because nothing had ever happened like this. We couldn't even believe that there was a murder in Bridgman.
Right. Yeah. And so this was... So Becky's car was stolen the tail end of her senior year of high school, which was 1996, and the murder happened in 97.
Yep.
And with her car, they eventually found her car in Nebraska, which is interesting because, you know, when they were stealing... It seems like that was what they were going to do with Becky's car.
Yeah.
They had stole her car. And they caught them in Nebraska and brought them back and brought her car back. And then they went to, I always get mixed up. Which one was it? It wasn't Abatoy's mom.
It was De Palma's mother.
De Palma's mother, right. So they were trying to steal her car to drive to California, which makes me think there's probably what they were trying to do with Becky's car.
Yeah, it does kind of sound like that.
Which makes it scary.
Yeah, there's a lot of hearsay about that case that I won't spread, but for whatever reason, they were trying to get to California, and that was the deal.
Right.
And with that, they've gone back and forth. The story has changed. You know, everybody kind of changes their story. But it sounds like Abatoy is the one that delivered all the blows, including the fatal blows. They said that there was at least three blows that were fatal to her.
10 hits to the head with a shovel.
With a shovel.
And so Abatoy was hitting his friend's mother over the head with a shovel.
But De Palma has said that it was his idea.
Right, not to kill her.
Not to kill her.
But to hit her over the head with a shovel.
And incapacitate her.
Incapacitate her and steal her car.
Yes.
Which, I don't know, the whole thing, I mean, just that case in general is always, it's never made a whole lot of sense to me because I don't see why you have to hit her over the head. I guess it's just to knock her out so she doesn't call police right away.
Yeah, I don't know
what the logic is there. It seems to me like they wanted to kill her.
And like I told you in our pre-show meeting, I've been in that house since that murder.
Yeah, this is interesting.
The house that they were in had a two-car garage, but a traditional two-car garage where it's one stall with a wall separating the two stalls.
And like a door between
them. And a door between them. And she had actually locked them in the farthest stall, which is where they got the shovel and broke the door down. And in that house at the time that I was in it, you could see the marks on the wall where they had been swinging the shovel and missed the door and hit the wall. I mean, it was pretty gruesome to think about.
I would love to know the details of it just out of sheer curiosity. So if she locked them in there, there must have already been a threat. Like, how did they get...
There was an argument that they'd gone to steal it, and then it was kind of...
But surely she didn't physically push them into that garage, so like...
Yeah, I mean, maybe the car was in there. Maybe that they were trying to get to the car in there. I don't fully know all the details. I know she was struck in the second part of the garage closest to the house.
Right.
And then went into the house, which is where the fatal blows were delivered.
Right. And so, yeah, 10 hits to the head with a shovel.
Mm-hmm.
And did they didn't get very far, did they, before they were caught?
I can't remember, but I don't believe they didn't get very far.
Mm-hmm. But so anyway, that's really not the point of this episode, is just more talk about the criminal justice reform when it comes to their sentencing. So they're both convicted and sentenced to life without parole.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them have come up for hearings with the county judges here to have their sentences reevaluated. And Anthony De Palma, so it was his
mother.
His mother is the one that was murdered. He's the one that said he didn't actually swing the shovel.
Yeah.
But he not only, it was his idea, but he actually gave the shovel to Mark and it told him to hit her with it.
By all reports, yeah.
That's what he says. So who knows what actually, but that's what he says.
And his hearing is already over and they're waiting sentencing right now, I believe, which there'll be another sentencing hearing, which should be in a couple days after this comes out.
Yeah. So they, where was it? Anyway, so, well, the judge did rule. So what's happening now is you have prosecutors that are fighting against this saying, no, they need to still have a life sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, of course, have attorneys fighting the other way. The judge overturned not the conviction, he overturned the sentence.
Yes.
And said that he agrees that sentence was unconstitutional. And that was March 2nd, I think.
So I believe so, yeah.
And then they're waiting for, did it say when the sentencing hearing would be?
I believe it was the 27th is the sentencing hearing.
Okay, so next, it'll be just a couple days after this episode airs.
And I know with what I read from Mark Abbottoy, which is actually his trial just went on, to see if he was going to get resentenced. They haven't even made a determination whether they'll resentence. And the defense and the prosecution have 45 days to submit a packet to the judge.
Right. Well, they've had a hearing, though, right?
They've already had a hearing.
Yeah.
But it's been undecided yet.
Right. So De Palma had his hearing. The judge said, yes, it was an unconstitutional sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that he believes that he's admitted guilt. He has shown remorse. And that he at least does have the ability to rehabilitate if he hasn't already.
Mm-hmm.
And so now he just waits to see what his new sentence is. Typically, from what I'm seeing, a lot of times they're not a whole lot different from a life sentence.
Yeah.
A lot of times they end up being like 40 to 60 years.
Yeah, which is strange to me, which we can get into later. That's strange to me, too, because you do see a lot of these with the, 30 to 60, 35 to 60, 40 to 60.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still basically life sentences.
Yeah, well, but I guess for a 17-year-old kid, mm-hmm. 40 years, they're getting out before they're 60.
Yeah.
It's not like a 40-year-old.
Well, so these two gentlemen that we're talking about were 17 when the murder happened, and they are now 40.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, they've been in jail 22, 23 years.
Right. Yeah. And so I'm curious to see how the law plays out with, because Mark
Abbottoy.
Mark Abbottoy, his hearing, I believe, is happening as we speak.
Yeah, I believe they're. Well, I think they've already closed the hearing. I think it was early this week. Yes.
Okay, so it's done, and then they're submitting their briefs.
Yes,
and then the judge will come back and give a ruling. But they're in the same crime, same circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that I could see where it would be different is if Abbottoy is not showing remorse.
Well, so there was the remorse part, but there's also a lot of childhood things that were brought up in Abbottoy's hearing
right.
that I know about that De Palma didn't have to deal with, that a lot of these people, I don't want to say a lot of people don't have to deal with, but that are also things they look into, which, like I said, which is family history, mental health, all these different things.
Right.
It's come out that he was abused. He was abused sexually by his step-grandfather and an older brother
right.
that he was sexually abused by. They'd also said that he was diagnosed with bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually thought there was something wrong with him when he was a child, and his mother would never get him medicated.
So what we're trying to determine here is, as an adult, will this person not be a threat to the society?
Well, so once he was in prison, they said that he got him medicated and straightened out. And
okay.
He has not had any problem with treatments.
See, that's what I'm wondering. Because, like I said, the whole point is not like excusing their crime, but it's to say that, are they clearly a different person now than they were then?
Mm-hmm.
And have they grown out of it? And like some of those things I'm hearing just from if you study criminal behavior analysis, like some of those things tend to lead to, they're factors that can tend to lead someone towards a life of violence, with as long as if you put other precipitating factor, but you're talking about some mental illness and some childhood trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And if you already have a predisposition to that, that's what Jim Clementi always says. If you take somebody that has a predisposition, an actual mental, physical, medical issue, like you're a sociopath, like your brain is wired to be a sociopath. Well, a lot of people are sociopaths, don't kill people.
Yeah.
But if you take that same person with the same condition and you throw in some childhood trauma and some other mental illness on top of that, and then some bad experiences throughout life, then that can create a psychopath, which mm-hmm. is someone who is going to, be very violent and harm people for fun, basically.
Yeah, and you look at some of these other cases, and some of them feel that way. Some of these cases you see, and you're like, that's a pretty rough, everything leads to that person not being resentenced, in my opinion.
Right. Well, one of them, so to move on past that, so one of those is a guy that did get resentenced, and it looks like he's going to get out soon. They said he could be paroled anytime now. And so this, the guy's name is Robert Lehman. He, in 1993, he was 16 years old. He murdered. And I, so this was very familiar to me. And I don't know, when I see the name, the victim's name was Rebecca Stowe. And mm-hmm. I just remember like people screaming for justice for Rebecca and the name Stowe coming up a lot. Cause I'm from this area. I'm not from Bridgman. So this is down by me is where we're at now in Niles. But so she's 15 years old. Tells him that she's pregnant by him and tells him that she won't get an abortion when he wants her to. So he takes her out to a farm in the neighboring county, breaks her neck, and buries her body. Now, he, the jury convicted him, first-degree premeditated murder. He got life without parole in 97 and currently is a... Here it says he's waiting a judge's decision after a resentencing hearing in August. But then an updated article says, judge revokes his life without parole sentence for the Niles teen killer, and he could be eligible for parole immediately.
Hmm.
Now, these are different cases to me. Like, I really don't know how I feel about this. So, in one, you have a couple kids whose goal, we think, was to steal a car and get out of town.
Mm-hmm.
And in the act, in the process of doing that, they killed someone. Now, I have an opinion on that too. I don't think you hit somebody in the head 10 times with a shovel.
Yeah.
If you're just trying to incapacitate them.
No, you're right about that.
So, in my opinion, that was intentional murder. But this guy, very clearly, I mean, he took her out, broke her neck.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what it takes to break someone's neck?
Yeah, it's not easy, I'm sure.
What it takes mentally,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just thinking back, and I don't want to get into details, but you have and I have both over, out here living us country folk, have had to kill chickens.
Mm-hmm.
That'll mess you up.
Yeah,
it can. If you're, I mean, a lesser or maybe a better for me. I try to be tough when I have to do it.
Yeah.
No, it'll mess you up in the act. That's for me, that's a weird place to go. My brain goes there thinking, taking a human being
mm-hmm.
and doing that, you're fighting someone you cared enough about that you slept with, and like, that's psychopath to me.
Yeah.
And burying the body, it just, I don't see, I don't know, it's rough, man.
It's hard to have a blanket statement on these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I do agree with the fact that the way the law is written, it's kind of up to a judge, and you have to make your case for it.
Mm-hmm.
That you have been rehabilitated and stuff like that. But it's like, how do you get past that? Like, that's an so the whole idea between your brain not being developed,
mm-hmm.
from what I've read, has to do with the fact that you don't necessarily have the ability, or at least not the ability you have as an adult, to fight impulses, right? So when you have an impulse to do something, you do it. As you get older, there's a step in between there where I have this impulse, like I'm mad and I want to hit you, but I'm older now and I'm like, yeah, there's going to be consequences to that. I don't want to do that.
Yeah,
but like, that's premeditated. To me, that's not a youth problem. That's not an underdeveloped brain problem. That's not an impulse problem.
Yeah.
That is premeditated murder.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And there's a lot of things that I see like this through different cases. And again, it's hard to blanket statement something, but you see cases where someone's shot and killed. Mm-hmm. And there's several of these cases locally that were rival gangs.
Right.
That's, I don't want to say that's impulse, but that's an impulse,
Well, it is to me. It's very different than what he did.
No, you're absolutely right. And then there are other cases locally where there's a guy that beat a person to death with a pipe wrench. At 17 years old. At 17 years old, that's an attack. You know what you're doing.
Right.
It takes a lot to beat somebody to death with a pipe wrench.
Yeah, for sure. And that's my issue with this. And I like the fact that a judge can hear evidence and make a ruling. But this one threw me for a loop because it's like, that guy?
Mm-hmm.
That guy gets his sentence revoked? He gets to go. Imagine, I mean, that's local. This girl's parents are still here and alive.
Yeah.
This man physically broke her neck, buried her body. I don't remember the details, but if I remember correctly, it was years before they found her body.
Wow.
And I could be wrong about that, but I do see the crime happened in 93 and he was convicted in 97. So I think it was a while before they found her body and finally arrested him and convicted him. But so when I see that he's one of the first in Berrien County that actually did get his sentence revoked, it's like, what the hell are we doing? But at the same time, I agree in most cases, you know, that someone who makes a mistake as a young kid hopefully would be given a chance. I've talked a little bit on Truth and Justice last week about prison reform and actually rehabilitating people.
Mm-hmm. And I think we talked about 2 weeks ago on Bob and Lee, we talked about the episode that everybody hated, the political episode. I think we got into a little bit of criminal reform in there. And
I don't remember.
And we talked about this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And that threw me for a loop. Like I do so much studying on criminal behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Like that behavior to me is like, that guy's not reformed. Like that's a cold blooded fucking killer.
Yeah.
That was not an impulse to do that.
You're 100% right.
And it takes even on an impulse to do something, you know, again, shooting someone is different to me.
Mm-hmm. So one thing real quick, how do you feel about this slow foot of the law here coming around? So this has been around since 2016.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of these cases are just recently getting resentenced. So I just don't know how I feel about that part.
The fact that it's taken 4 years?
That it's taken 4 years to get some of these people resentenced.
Honestly, I thought it was pretty quick.
You think so?
It sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But, given the kind of standard of the court system and how long it takes to... So look at Anand Syed. He had his post-conviction relief hearing on February, and we're waiting for a judge's ruling. It was like a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes just to get a ruling can be years. So the fact that these guys, within 4 years of a Supreme Court ruling are in court and have decisions it's slow. Our system is slow and it sucks, but that's faster than I would expect it to happen.
Okay. I guess I just don't have enough experience with it because it seems really slow to me.
Yeah. Imagine if you're in prison.
Oh, yeah.
How slow it would be.
I couldn't imagine.
And I got to imagine, too, they're not high priority either because in most cases, these cases we're looking at, they're not looking at, getting released today.
Yeah.
So you look at, the Dakota Eliason,
mm-hmm.
Is a kid, another one, right down the road from my parents' house.
Mm-hmm.
Was he 14?
He was 14 at the time. I actually have a weird connection with him that we won't get into, but I have a weird connection with that kid, too.
It's so weird being a small town that we kind of have connections to all these people.
Mm-hmm.
This kid at 14 years old, staying with his grandparents' house right down the road from, it was actually at the time, he was right between my house and my parents' house because we lived close to each other. But he just grabbed a gun. His grandfather was sleeping on the couch and walked up to his sleeping grandfather, shot and killed him,
mm-hmm.
and then went and sat out on the front porch and waited for the police to come.
Yeah.
Grandma called the police, freaking out, and he just sat there.
Yeah, 14 years old.
And I've never heard any excuse. I've never heard any reason why, not like he was being abused or molested or just grabbed a gun in the middle of the night and shot his grandpa to death.
So they actually resentenced him pretty early. They actually resentenced him before it was retroactive to do it.
Right.
In 2015, and he got 35 to 60, which that's a whole nother thing that I don't understand. And maybe you can clarify this.
Mm-hmm.
Where does this time gap come from, the 35 to 60? That's a long time. That's a big, 25 years difference.
Right. Usually it's half. Usually what it is it's you get, they call it good time.
Okay.
So a lot of times it'll be like 3 to 6 years. Basically, so you're sentenced to 6 years, but for every day you serve and you stay out of trouble, it takes a day off the end.
Okay.
So if you go through a year and you don't get in trouble at all and you've got a good record, then it takes a year off the end of your sentence. So it works. It's wait. So if you have a perfect record in prison and you have a 3 to 6 year sentence, typically at the end of 3 years, you'll get out. Every little ding that happens along the way, anytime you get in trouble or anything like that, it makes it longer. Now, there's other, that may not be true of all states and it may not be mm-hmm. entirely accurate in Michigan, but that's always my understanding is that range is if you do everything right, then you'll get out at that lower range.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, then you get out at the later range.
And so even in that case, they've put that he's eligible for parole in 2042.
Yeah.
So at the age of 51.
Right. Which to me, and I don't know the circumstances of his case, but it's a 14-year-old kid. That's younger than Quentin. That's Bella's age.
Mm-hmm.
He needs, obviously, to be locked up. He shot his grandfather in cold blood.
Mm-hmm.
But would I like to believe that this kid can turn his life around, grow up, and then be a productive member of society? I do. I hope that happens.
Yeah.
You know, I wish I knew more about his case. I should. I remember just being baffled and everyone being baffled by the fact that he didn't seem to give any reason why he did it.
And I don't believe there was much reason. It was just he wanted to do it.
Yeah. Which is scary. That's leaning on a psychopath.
Very, very scary.
Yep. But yeah, his was interesting because so he was convicted. It happened in 2010. He was convicted in 2010, sentenced to life without parole. And yeah, so and then 2012 is when the Supreme Court ruling happened, saying they couldn't do automatic life without parole. And then 2015, before the retroactive decision came in from the Supreme Court, he was resentenced. But I think the reason for that is the case that overturned or that caused them to go retroactively. All that's happening there is someone like Dakota Eliason is filing saying, because of this 2012 ruling, I want my sentence reevaluated.
Mm-hmm.
And then the judges, they're saying, nope, that's not retroactive. And then somewhere along the lines, some judge somewhere says, okay, I think in your case, you can use that law. I'm going to interpret that as meaning that you can have yours reevaluated.
Mm-hmm.
And then because that happens, now that becomes a precedent that gets cited because especially so in the, what was the case that went to in 2016?
Montgomery versus Louisiana.
Yeah. So someone in Louisiana ends up appealing that all the way to the Supreme Court. And once it gets to the Supreme Court and they make a ruling on it, then that ruling just goes down. So it's not like a new law.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a legal precedent. Basically, since you already know the Supreme Court's opinion on making it retroactive, it's pointless to argue that it can't be retroactive anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because you already know if it gets to the top, that's where it's going to go. It becomes a precedent in a case law. So he was one of those cases that was fighting for it before that and won.
I have a hard time with the ages too. And I think that's maybe partially where his came in, where they decided to do it, resentence him earlier because he was 14.
Right.
And that's hard for me. And I know this is saying it as an adult saying this, but like, I feel there's a difference between a 14-year-old and a 17-year-old. Granted, I know it's only a couple years, but I feel like there is a lot of maturity that comes in those couple of years right there.
Well, I mean, you got to think of 14, especially for boys, not so much with girls. A lot of boys at 14 haven't even hit puberty yet.
Yeah.
It's a very different time, but...
I had facial hair in eighth grade.
Did you?
Yeah. I was one of those weird kids.
And that's why you don't have hair on the top of your head now.
Yeah. It's going away.
It came early and it's going early.
Yeah. Sadly.
It's tough because like in a case like his, I don't know the circumstances, but you want to believe that he can be really rehabilitated.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of these other ones where, like you said, gang on gang, especially a young kid. So we live right near the city of Benton Harbor, which made national news for the riot several years ago. And it's a predominantly African-American community. It's a very poor community.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, I worked in the juvenile detention center as a teacher for a long time.
Yeah.
And I would see these kids come in and out and it was like, I would tell them like, when you go home, like just keep this up. We're teaching you how to behave here.
Mm-hmm.
So just when you go home, do that. And they would tell them like, Mr. Ruff, if I act like this when I go there, I'm going to get my ass whooped.
Yeah.
And so they get into this cycle. So when I see two black kids in Benton Harbor that are 15, 14 years old, they get in an altercation and shoot somebody, I'm not looking at that person and thinking that they are as dangerous as, say, the 15-year-old white kid that took his girlfriend to a farm, broke her neck, and buried her.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kid I'm scared of.
No, you're absolutely right. I work downtown in the middle of those riots, downtown Benton Harbor, in the middle of those riots.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I worked down there. Yeah, it was terrifying.
I bet it was. See, I knew a lot of firemen that worked in the area that they were afraid to go to fires
because
there was a bad combination. They were lighting shit on fire, and then when the fire trucks would come, they'd throw bricks through the fire trucks.
Yeah. So I grew up in the area, and I grew up in a biracial household. We're going off on a sidetrack, but it is what it is. So I grew up in a biracial household, so I saw both sides of it. But the area, for a lot of people that don't realize it, is it's a racial hotbed. There's a lot of racial tension here. The city that we're talking about is two cities. It's St. Joseph and Benton Harbor. But if you really look at it, it's one city that has a river that runs between it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it really is.
Right.
And the St. Joseph side, it's 90% white, upper middle class. On the Benton Harbor side, it's 90% black in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the racial tension there is just overwhelming.
And speaking of which, that's actually a topic that we're hoping to cover. I've actually been in contact. So there was a case out of, was it 91?
Yeah, 91.
1991, there was a case of a, I don't give too much of it away, but there was a young black kid that was found dead in the river in St. Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And because he was a black kid in St. Joe, they assumed must have fallen in the river and yep. never really investigated it. And an author from Chicago wrote a really good book on it.
Yeah, there's a best-selling book about the whole case.
Mm-hmm. And I've been in contact with the author, and we're trying to get him in here to talk about that case. But it gives you an idea of the tensions.
Yeah, there's a lot of tension there. And that's how the riot started, was it was all racially motivated.
Mm-hmm. So. Wasn't it a cop that killed a kid?
It was a traffic stop. It was a white police officer that tried to have a routine traffic stop with a black gentleman on a motorcycle.
That's right.
And he didn't stop, and they chased him, and he crashed his motorcycle and died.
He killed a kid, I think. I think he crashed.
It was him.
Oh, see, I thought that the guy, that he crashed his motorcycle and hit kids or a kid and killed them.
I don't think that's the same thing.
Whatever it was, it was the officer, because they chased him, ended up resulting in this death.
Yeah.
And when they either they didn't charge him or they went to trial for it,
mm-hmm.
and the officer wasn't convicted of anything, then we had these huge riots.
And I do believe they actually, after that, they put in a precedent that they're not allowed to chase anybody through a residential area.
No, they're not allowed to exceed the speed limit
mm-hmm.
in Benton Harbor.
So that was way off topic, but. So, I mean, that's the area we grew up in, living in and seeing this. So, like you said, these different cases, they are hard to say. And it's so hard to blanket them saying this kid's okay, this kid's not, who should get resentenced and who shouldn't. But sometimes what is there to do? You know, I guess I don't fully understand. I guess I don't fully know how I feel about this. I do feel that this is probably right, that they shouldn't just be automatically convicted and sentenced to life in prison without parole. Because they do have that chance for rehabilitation.
Like I said, I guess, how the law is written now to at least, basically, if I understand it right, everyone at least has an opportunity for a hearing
mm-hmm.
to have their case reevaluated. And they have certain standards they need to meet. It seems like the judges here in Berrien County must be pretty progressive, because they seem to be one. I haven't seen any of that list of 14 where someone was, denied.
Yeah.
You know, and me looking at them, like I said, there's some that were like gang violence. There some of them that was like, they were robbing a grocery store
mm-hmm.
or they were, attempting to rob someone. Like, to me, those are the ones that, like, and of course, man, the other side of this is the victims and the victims' families.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you mean he gets to start his life over?
Yeah.
When my loved one doesn't. So that's tough. But then there's some of them, like I said, I keep coming back to it, but this dude who buried his girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
like that doesn't, you don't get to say, I'm sorry for that. You don't get to blame your youth for that. That's calculated. And there's another one that's either right now waiting for a hearing, or it's coming up soon, or in the middle of a hearing. But this guy was 16, took a 10-year-old girl, drug her behind a building and raped her. And then put a plastic bag over her head to murder her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't get to get out. In my opinion, I don't care how old he was.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
That's a different kind of wiring.
He was 16 at the time of that.
Yeah.
And it's currently waiting a decision on whether he will be, whether the trial will come forth to be resentenced.
That's right. So he had his hearing. He's waiting on a decision.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling, if that kid gets a new trial, that guy, like, or a new sentence, I think we're being too... As much as I am, obviously, what I do for a living,
mm-hmm.
my passion is for criminal justice reform. Like there's a difference between a cold, calculated, planned decision. Sure, maybe it was an impulse to do it, but your impulse
is to rape a 10-year-old girl and then suffocate her with a plastic bag.
Right. And that's what I mean. So if you have an impulse,
it's fucking bullshit.
Yeah. If you have an impulse to steal a car and you're like, let's do it, and this person's in the way, and like, I'll just get rid of them, and
mm-hmm.
That's just so different from your impulse that you're dealing with. The core of your impulse is to harm another human. What that tells me is it's rooted, it's way deep down in your brain, is to harm and hurt other human beings.
Yeah.
If we're worrying about, well, he's not old enough to fight that impulse to rape and kill people, but now he is, fuck that.
Yeah.
I don't think that's okay. Now, if it's he wasn't old enough to fight the impulse to steal a car and made rash decisions, which resulted in someone's death. That's a very different story, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Did you find what you're looking for?
I found it. I haven't read it yet. So just in case you were wondering about the Benton Harbor riots. So in 2003, several citizens of Benton Harbor rioted 2 days when black motorcyclist Terrence Shearn, being chased by a police officer, crashed into a building and died. You're right. Rioters sent 5 vacant and dilapidated houses on fire. Okay, yeah. Yeah, you're right. So for some reason, I thought that wasn't there another incident where a kid got killed?
I do think there was another incident. That was later on, but yeah.
Yeah, also resulting in a chase.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, and that was a weird, I don't know, I guess it all depends how you look at it, but the guy was stopped, and then it just seemed like a weird reason to riot, but I think it also had to do with a lot of the built-up racial tensions mm-hmm. over the years. You know, because in this case, the guy was clearly in the wrong because he ran from the police when he was told to stop.
Yeah.
But then, and then the argument was, well, yeah, but if he just didn't chase him, then he would have not died.
I think you're 100% right. I think it's just that crack that finally set the dam loose.
Yeah. You know
what I mean? Like that, it wasn't just this event. It was mm-hmm. everything that had been building before that.
Right. All right. Did you have anything else? I know I guess we're fine. We're a little shorter than I thought we would be.
So going forward with this, I know you have some opinions on how juveniles should be sentenced and handled. Mm. And as far as like housing, like I know you are not for letting juveniles go to prison, adult prison.
Absolutely not. No.
So where do you think they should go?
Well, right now we have juvenile detention centers where they can be housed.
So even somebody that's done a heinous thing like this.
Yeah. I still don't think, I don't think an 18-year-old kid is capable of handling themselves in a prison filled with grown adults. I think that is a recipe for disaster. I don't think that our criminal justice system should be focused on punishment. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to be containing and confining a threat and rehabilitating is what our prison system should be. Like once you've been determined you are a threat to society, then I'm going to take you here to be rehabilitated. If you're just say a, you know, whatever, you're caught with some drugs that are illegal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, so it's not about punishing you. It's like, okay, well, we're going to send the idea behind prison is to take you, in my world, is to take you, I'm going to put you here for 2 years and we're going to rehabilitate you. So when you come out, you're not going to do that anymore.
Okay.
But when you take an 18-year-old kid or a 17, 16-year-old kid and throw them into a prison that is not actually designed to rehabilitate, is an extremely violent place. And throw a young kid like that into the middle of it. I mean, I'll be very blunt. They're going to get the shit beat out of them. They're going to get raped. They're going to get tortured. And that's, I don't care what that person did. If we want people in general to treat other people with some kind of dignity and respect, treat people like human beings, then we need to treat the people that are in our prisons like human beings as well. And that's, I think that there's a, I know I just went off on this recently. But we need to reform what's happening in the prisons, and we sure as hell don't need to be sending kids to the prison, whether it's a juvenile detention center or if there's, you know, wings of the prison for younger offenders, which I think is more realistic.
Okay.
You know, where because I can only speak from experience from the Berrien County Juvenile Detention Center.
Mm-hmm.
It's not big. There's not a lot of space. And if you have a very violent offender, it's hard to find a place for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what I think about with the person you were talking about that broke his girlfriend's neck and buried the person. You know what I mean?
Right.
That seems like a violent, calculated individual.
Yeah, for sure. But so to me, it's almost like it's kind of a weird example, but in the school my kids go to here, the Buchanan schools, a few years back, they took the high school, they closed down one of the elementaries, made this big shift, take the fifth graders that used to be in the elementary, moved them into the middle school and took the eighth graders and moved them into the high school. So our high school building is 8 through 12 now.
Okay.
And a lot of people were very concerned about, it's almost the same concept. I don't want my eighth grader going to, you know, which is, you know, 13, 14 years old,
mm-hmm.
going to school with 18-year-old seniors.
Yeah.
And the school assured us it's not going to be a problem. And it wasn't, because what they did is they took the high school and they took one wing of it, an entire hallway wing, and said, this is the eighth grade wing.
Mm-hmm.
And All the eighth grade classes were in there, the eighth grade lockers. They didn't put them in lunch at the same time. And that keeps that separation, even though they're in the same building. In my opinion, prison should have a young offenders wing.
Okay.
That is, okay, anybody that's, in my opinion, anybody that's 21 and younger, maybe even 25, lives here. Okay. And then when they get older, they move to the other wing.
I have a tough time with that. I mean, that's where it draws, you know, that's where it's hard to draw that line, is that age. Because you said 21, possibly 25, but then you're still putting 14-year-old kids, 16-year-old kids with 25-year-olds.
Yeah, good. 25 is, I was looking at it on the wrong end. But yeah, I think 21 though.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know what else you do with them.
No, I don't either. I just want to hear your theory. That's what I'm saying is I don't know either. By me saying that I think that's wrong, that doesn't mean that my opinion is anywhere right. Because I don't know the answer either.
Well, I think that, again, it's kind of perfect world stuff, but you would have, you know, if you have a special wing of the prison for kids, that there's not a lot.
Yeah.
If you look at the general population of kids that are people that are in adult prisons, mm-hmm. there's not a lot of 14 to, and really it should be 16 and up, I think, even to be charged as an adult to go to the adult prison. But six, you know, that 5-year window, 16 to 21, mm-hmm. it's not a very lot of them. And if that wing of the prison, you have better security, better cameras, and you're making sure that there's not the stuff going on that's going on in the other, and for Christ's sake, take care of that in the other wing as well, in mm-hmm. the rest of the prison, so we could stop some of this bullshit. But I think you could, if you had them divided off like that, you could contain the situation better. But I think you're right. 25 is getting to be too far.
I understand the psychological aspect of that and how your brain's not fully developed to that point, but I still feel like that's pretty far.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think 20, but I would still say, obviously at least 18, but I would still say at 21. I don't think it's because, you know, you turn 18, you're magically ready to be with adults. By 21, you're a developed, at least physically a fully developed mm-hmm. adult that can handle yourself
yeah.
a little better in the other wing of the prison.
Well, I think that's all I got for this. I know we want to hit this topic a couple more times, but I think we're going to kind of piece it together because it's too big to do in one episode. It's too heavy to do in one episode. There's no way we could possibly cover this in one episode.
Right.
So I think with this juvenile part, this is kind of where we're going to wrap it up.
Yeah. So yeah, what I'd like to do is kind of what we started to do with the presidential candidates. We'll have a criminal justice reform topic or series, and this topic is on juvenile sentencing, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, once a month or so, we'll circle back to another. So feel free to write into us either an email at contact@bobweavepod.com or through any of our social media. It's all @bobweavepod. Write into us if there's topics that you want to cover. Other thing, a little housekeeping stuff before we close up. We still have Freddie Miller's GoFundMe going. It's well over 1,000 now. If you go to GoFundMe.com/Freddie Miller, that's FREDDIE. I would love to see him get to that 3,500 and get that license. Hopefully you guys enjoyed last week's standing up comedy. Zach's already writing his new material.
I sure am.
Ready to go again.
And if you look on YouTube, you can find all those bits now as well.
Right. Yes. You individually. So yes. You can look at Zach's and mine and my brother's and Freddie Miller's. Also, this Saturday, my TV show is coming out.
Yeah, boy. I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
I'm proud of you. I know I can't say that a lot.
Not very often at all.
Especially, you know what? You started this episode saying you fucking are tired of seeing me.
I know, and now you're being
nice to
me.
I'm ending this episode saying I'm proud of you.
I know, you're being so sweet
to me. So all the listeners heard that. All the YouTube watchers heard that.
Yeah. So the Forgotten West Memphis 3 will be airing on the Oxygen Network, our 4-hour series that was going to be, you know, 4 episodes. Now they're doing it as a weekend event. So you get 2 episodes on Saturday starting at 8 p.m. Eastern time on Oxygen on the 28th, and then the other 2 episodes on Sunday at the same time, 8 p.m. So I'm really excited about that.
We're doing a watch party.
We are. Yes.
Yes.
I mean, you're invited. You guys aren't necessarily invited, but we'll on the internet.
Live watch party.
Right. Yeah. Live watch party. The
phones.
Yeah. It's going to be weird, especially with all this Corona stuff. But so, yeah, small group. We're going to gather together. You guys are definitely invited.
Guys, find us on YouTube, Bob and Weave Pod. Like, subscribe, share it with your friends. Look across all social media. Make sure you're sharing this show with your friends. That's the biggest way to get this show to grow for us.
Yes. And make sure you leave us those ratings and reviews on iTunes. Other than that, I don't think we have anything else big coming down the pike right now. We had to cancel our spring break, so
that
we'll
sucks.
Be here that week because the area we were going to go is pretty much shut down. But hey, we're all doing our part. Oh, I just remembered what I want to do. I think I said it on the already on Truth and Justice. I want to make sure I say it on here too, regarding the COVID-19, the coronavirus. There's something that if I would love to just encourage people to do, the people that are really on my heart, besides all the, you know, I'm really worried about all the prisoners we deal with, and there's a lot of scenarios. But out here on the outside, people in the service industry right now, you know, people that wait on tables, you know, and rely on tips for a living with all the restaurants and bars shut down, that's devastating. I mean, that's a day-to-day employee worker that now has no income. So do us a favor. If you can afford it, you're the type of person that likes to eat out occasionally, whatever your local restaurants and bars are, call down, get some takeout food if they're doing that. Try to help these people out. And if we can just throw some money back to them by doing something that we would normally do anyway, by getting that takeout, that's just something. If we can all do that little part, I'm going to try to do that just to try to help out as much as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And with that being said, Zach, buddy, thanks for being my friend.
Love you, buddy.
Love you too. Bob and Weave is an NBI Studios production, produced and edited by Mike Bussing, music by Shane Yoder of PutThemInASong.com. The artwork and our logo was created by Zach, and the video editing was done by me. You can connect with us on all forms of social media at Bob Weave Pod. And if you'd rather watch than listen, check out the Bob and Weave Podcast on YouTube. If you have any questions or a guest request, you can email us at contact@bobweavepod.com. If you like the show, please take a minute to go on iTunes and rate and review us. On behalf of myself and Zach, we love you guys. Thanks for listening.